Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America continues. Wow, I gotta say, just trying to watch some of the Democratic debate during the commercial breaks, I potted it up in the studio, and it was intense at a couple of moments. Now, I don't say this often, but I actually would have watched this whole thing. It was almost like watching a presidential debate in a way. They were really going at each other, and they kind of forgot about Donald Trump for the longest time. Joining us now, he's the author of American Politics on the Rocks. Polita-geek.com is a website. You can check him out. He's our friend on Mondays, but now after the debate, Rich Rubino, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here again.
Oh, what a fiery debate. How would you describe this one?
Fiery is a very good terminology for it. I don't know what the actual term would be, but I mean, this is, you know, for a Democratic Party that the talk was, we need to be unified, we need to beat Donald Trump. And this one, the gloves were off, and just about every candidate went after just about every other candidate, specifically Michael Bloomberg. And I don't know Michael Bloomberg, he didn't seem to know what was coming to him. It was fascinating toward the beginning, questions that I think most people thought that he would have been prepared for. For example, they Elizabeth Warren kind of went after him for things he had said about women. She basically introduced it she brought all this stuff up, and then she said, Donald Trump did not say that, another billionaire, Michael Bloomberg, said it. And Bloomberg didn't quite know how to respond. Then she asked why he had not released non-disclosure agreements, and Bloomberg said, well, they're not released. We made an agreement between myself and some of the women, but he did not really give a response, and the audience kind of almost scowled at it.
Ooh.
It was, for somebody that the money that Bloomberg has spent on this, he did not seem very well prepared.
And this is right off the bat? Is this how it started?
Yes. The beginning, it was the last, the first hour of the debate, really how it began, was people essentially going after Michael Bloomberg and part of Elizabeth Warren, who a lot of people thought her campaign was essentially dormant, that she was just, you know, basically just coming, kind of trying to get over the edge for till Super Tuesday. She may have revived herself a little bit on this debate stage. She really went after Bloomberg. She really excoriated Bloomberg, and Bloomberg did not really have much of a response. But Bernie Sanders is now the preponderant front runner, so you wonder how much support Elizabeth Warren will be able to purloin from Sanders and where the rest of her support will come from. But this was probably the tour de force, I think, for Elizabeth Warren, but it could be too late in the game for her to actually garner enough delegates to be a viable candidate for Super Tuesday. But, you know, she took the gloves off, and she really did everything she possibly could to get herself to the next stage, like Amy Klobuchar, for example. The last debate in New Hampshire prior to the New Hampshire primary, she really put herself in a very positive position for that debate. I think Elizabeth Warren probably for the New Hampshire primary rather probably did that for the Nevada caucuses, but she has a lot of ways to go to get to be front runner in the state of Nevada.
Yeah, I saw a couple of different things, so I missed the Bloomberg stuff at the start, but I will say the moments I was able to catch a Bloomberg, he really looked like he was not fully prepared for this. It almost felt like he said to himself, "I got this." And just walked right in and said, I got this. No big deal.
Yes.
And it doesn't surprise me because he spent all of this money on the digital advertisements and the TV and all of this, but he hasn't been making public appearances. Like the videos of his ads make it look like he's out there in public talking to people all the time, but he's been hiding. You haven't seen him like these town halls that all the other candidates are doing. And then he gets up there, doesn't look all that prepared. There was this other dynamic between Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. They were going at it too. They were not giving up on each other.
Oh, well, yeah, in many respects, their votes, it's the same between Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, I think Michael Bloomberg as well, and I think Pete Buttigieg, they're going after a lot of the same kind of constituency. They're going after the same group of voters, and there are many times when, for example, they brought up the issue of Amy Klobuchar recently could not name the president of Mexico.
Yeah.
And Pete Buttigieg looked at her and said, you know, you're a senator, you're on the committee that deals with this. How come you don't know the president of Mexico? And Amy Klobuchar, you know, came back and she made a couple of jokes. She talked about how, you know, well, I know that there are 120 members of the Israeli Knesset, for example, and kind of got a laugh. And then Pete Buttigieg said, essentially, you should be more prepared. But then it came to Elizabeth Warren, who kind of embarrassed Pete Buttigieg a little bit because she came back and she said, I just want to defend Amy for a minute. You know, we all forget, since you forget a name once or twice. I think that actually probably benefited Amy Klobuchar because the argument is, well, maybe she forgot her name, but she actually knew who the president of Mexico was. Obviously, there's a time when everybody's going to forget the name of a world leader, but does she actually know who the person is? Does she actually know the Mexican system? I think Warren kind of covered for her in that respect, and I think Buttigieg did not really have a response. You know, it reminded me, for example, of when Rick Perry was debating in Ron Paul one time back in 2012, and this was kind of the death moment for Rick Perry's campaign. He was talking about the agencies that he would cut, and then he started going through them, and then he couldn't name energy, and then he said, oops. And then, you know, but he obviously knew what these agencies were.
Yeah,
he just had kind of a, his brain just kind of froze at that time. I think a lot of people, Michelle Bachmann later defended him, and I think a lot of people can understand that at any time in a debate, your brain can freeze. It doesn't mean you don't know, you know, what these departments were.
Again, for 4 hours a night, I talk for a living, and it happens to me all the time. All the time.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's embarrassing.
And I think
it
most
just
people
happens.
Can understand that, too. Yeah.
And you know what I noticed, and Rich Rubino joining us here on Overnight America, I noticed that just based on what I was able to pot in and listen to during this debate, Bernie Sanders was really showing why he's number one in the polls. Things that were thrown at him, he was great at not only dismissing, but going above it. Like it was almost like he was Teflon, the things that were being thrown at him. And then I noticed Klobuchar really made a big push. Honestly, I see her moving into a number two spot after a performance like this. Like she made a huge impression on a lot of people tonight.
Oh, no, she absolutely did. I think that there's kind of that the problem is there are four candidates that are competing for the center left moderate vote. And I'd love to see a poll in the next couple of days to see how people now view Michael Bloomberg, because so many voters think the only frame of reference they have for Michael Bloomberg is New York City mayor guy in the ads. You know, a lot of the reason he was so. You know,
the guy in the ads. I like that. That's how he's going to be referred to.
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, when you spend as much money as he's spending, and you have a lot of low information voters out there, and a lot of people who really are kind of, you know, have lives and they're peripherally following politics, and they see this guy, and all of a sudden he gets name recognition. And obviously, there's a reason why people that have the highest name recognition are often the highest in the polls, because sometimes they're the only one or two people that somebody can actually recognize. You know, if you pull him out of a lineup, he said, oh, you know, Bloomberg, I remember him from the ad. I would like the ad. You know, I know he was New York City mayor, but you know, he really did show that he was, in many respects, unprepared. I think he almost looked kind of elitist. He almost looked like, why are we debating? And it was very fascinating because early in the debate, he said basically Sanders will not win against Donald Trump. And he was trying to make that case, which I think is really going to alienate from a lot of the young people, because as Donald Trump recently said himself, one thing Sanders does have that I think Bloomberg and a lot of the other candidates don't have is they have people that I think really believe that there is only one God, that there is no God but Bernie Sanders. Mm. I mean, there are people that will absolutely die for him, which I don't think you can say for some of the other candidates whose argument is, for example, well, I'm the most electable candidate. Bernie Sanders, you know, he will bring out, whether you like it or not, a lot of people who would only come out for him. And but Bloomberg's case is essentially that, you know, you get into the general election and nobody is going to vote for a socialist. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic the rest of the way. I think the general consensus a lot of people had prior to this debate is eventually Bloomberg's got the money, so he's going to stay in, and he's so focused on Super Tuesday after these four states. And Bernie obviously has the momentum, and he has the supporters that will essentially take a bullet for him. So it could be between these two, but. You know, I really think that you can make a case that all six of these candidates can stay in this race, and essentially you can get to the point where you have the first broker convention since 1952 when both the Republicans and the Democrats had it, and then theoretically, but on a broker convention, by the way, if this does happen in Milwaukee, on the first ballot, all the delegates are pledged to the person that they're there for, but once you get to the second and third ballot, they can go for absolutely anybody, so this could be an absolute free-for-all. I think that's a politicalist junkie's dream.
Yeah. Looking back at some of these clips, Bloomberg may be the stuffiest billionaire I've ever seen. Like, you look at these other billionaires and the ones that at least are name recognition, the Elon Musks of the world. You know, it's almost like Iron Man, Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Very charismatic. You know, they got this certain allure to them. You know, they make it look like they're larger than life. Not Bloomberg. He looks like he's kind of like, I don't know, he's like Weekend at Bernie's. Like someone's propping him up and holding him up and just kind of doing the campaign for him. Now, I want to read one thing on the bottom scroll real quick. They use the term fiery debate, so I feel like MSNBC may actually be listening to us in this radio program. Okay, so the bottom scroll, let me read this. And based on, again, I didn't really see the debate. I was only watching during the commercial breaks because I was doing the show here. But they didn't really talk about Donald Trump all that much. They spent a lot of their time just going at each other. So here's the bottom scroll or on MSNBC. It says, Democrats hit Trump in trade tough shots in Las Vegas. I would almost wager that they traded more tough shots than they did talking about Trump tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Toward the end, and some of the closing statements, they essentially, some of the candidates said, yes, you know, where that there was a lot that unified us. And Amy Klobuchar always tries to talk about that, how, you know, if you don't like either of the extremes, you have a home with me. She didn't say that's this debate, but she said that in previous debates. But no, they really went after each other more so than anybody else. Even in the closing statements, and usually the closing statements is a unifying message, Joe Biden, in that closing statement toward the end, kind of went directly after Bernie Sanders for voting against in the 2007 immigration piece of legislation that he said if that was made legislation, you'd have 6 million more Americans, essentially. And, you know, Bernie Sanders shot back and talked about organizations that had come out against the legislation. But it was fascinating. I think that, you know, when Elizabeth Warren's case, and this was her kind of to her do or die moment. She's not just going to go back to, you know, being a United States senator and try to go off on a positive note. She's obviously in this to win it. And I think a lot of her supporters, I think there's going to be a lot more money coming into her campaign the next few days. I think some of her benefactors will say, you know, she's not quite dead yet. I think in Bernie Sanders' case, you know, he really he's probably has the best command of answering every single question and every single criticism of the system of socialism that can possibly be asked. Even Michael Bloomberg actually suggested that he supported communism, which got just a kiss from the crowd. And when you're talking to a Democratic audience, you know, that going after comparing socialism to communism probably is not in vogue. But I don't know how Michael Bloomberg prepared for this debate. I don't know. You know, this isn't, you know, this isn't some hayseed. I mean, this is a guy who's gone through debates. He's been elected, you know, 3 terms as mayor of New York City. So, I mean, he's been through this process. He's been through this debate. I mean, the biggest city in the entire country, even bigger than Sullivan, Indiana, by the way.
You know, Rich, I got some other questions for you, if you don't mind, after the break.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. You can check his book out now. You can get links to it and see some of his other work by going to polita-geek.com, polita-geek.com, or just do a Google search for Rich Rubino, who continues next on Overnight America KMOX.
Radio's BS detector, Mark Reardon. Weekday afternoons at 2 on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, thanks for joining us on Overnight America. The debates are done over in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the reactions are starting to come in. Joining us and continuing with us here is Rich Rubino. Thank you. I know you sat down. Did you have some popcorn? How do you prepare for a debate?
No, I just sit there and I watch it, and then occasionally I look at what people are saying on the social media avenue as well.
Yeah, so there's a few things I wanted to ask you about because I didn't get to see this, but there was one moment where Bernie Sanders was what looked like laughing so much his face turned red. What was that?
I don't remember that.
Oh.
I don't remember what the context was about that. There were a couple moments. It may have been, I don't know if he was laughing or looked offended, but there was one instance where I know Michael Bloomberg tried to equate communism with socialism, which that might have been one of the instances. But, you know, a lot of people were going after Bernie Sanders, and he was really, you know, sticking up for himself.
I think this was something between him and Buttigieg, because they kept showing him.
Oh, I know what it might have been. They asked a question because Pete Buttigieg had actually won an award back in 2007 for an essay that he wrote in high school where he praised, where he praised, because I think he graduated from high school in 2004, but he praised Bernie Sanders for the fact that he was essentially, you know, kind of stood by himself in many respects, and Buttigieg kept saying that, well, I respect, you know, I still respect him in many ways, but essentially we need to do something that's more practical, and that may have been part of the reason because, you know, it is true. He did write an essay that he won an award for where he praised him essentially as a profile in courage.
How about that? There's another moment, too, and it seemed like Klobuchar and Buttigieg, what a dynamic between those two, mostly because there's a few name-calling. Like, Klobuchar called him Ted Kennedy over here or something like that.
What happened was she was going after him for something that he someone that she had voted for Borders and Custom Enforcement, and she said Ted Kennedy, and then it was kind of they stopped talking for a second. People thought she was going after Ted. I was like, why is she going after Ted Kennedy? Later it was because Ted Kennedy had supported somebody and supported legislation. I think that's what it was.
Oh, I got you. I thought she was calling him a Ted Kennedy.
In sarcasm. No. I was thinking, why would you go after Ted Kennedy in the Democratic debate? That's political suicide. But
yeah, and the other thing was they were talking about Pete Buttigieg's experience. So there's a few things where she said, listen, I'm out there, you know, I've proposed or I've got, 100 bills
100
passed?
Yeah,
and then she's talking about I'm on these committees, I'm doing these things. You know, you haven't done any of these things. So she was hitting on the experience of Buttigieg as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it is true. Amy Klobuchar, part of the reason she has over 100 pieces of legislation, and there are some members of the Senate, what it is, it's called, you're the lead sponsor, the lead Democratic sponsor. Anyone can co-sponsor legislation. That just means that you're one of, 70 people who agrees that legislation should pass. If you're the lead sponsor, usually there are two members that will usually be the lead sponsors. Then the bill essentially becomes law, and then it usually says this person was the lead sponsor, and then you had a bunch of co-sponsors. And it's true that she's been the lead sponsor of over 100 pieces of legislation. She's actually known the Republican Party in Minnesota has always given her the moniker of the Senator for Small Things, because a lot of legislation that she will get passed is stuff that's very non-controversial that will get 100-0. But, she'll focus on issues like toys coming from China, issues that aren't really kind of the sexy issues, but she says that they're extremely important. Some of them benefit her state directly. As a result, she's always one of the most popular senators in the country. She visits all counties in Minnesota. She gets reelected in places like, Colin Peterson's district, Michelle Bachmann's old district. She's very popular there because she focuses on local issues. And generally speaking, senators that focus on local issues like that are not the ones to run for president.
Yeah.
That's why I think a lot of people didn't think she'd be a major presidential candidate, because usually those are the ones that are on the Appropriations Committee that kind of sit back, they're spoils men. They try to get the spoils for their state, and they focus on minor issues, and they actually get this legislation passed. A lot of senators and a lot of House members will go in for 20, 30 years and only be the lead sponsor on maybe 3 or 4 pieces of legislation, and 2 of them might be naming a post officer after somebody. but that doesn't mean that they haven't done anything, because lots of times you're working in the background trying to get a provision or trying to get an amendment. And what Bernie Sanders does, they actually call him the king of amendments, because he gets very few pieces of legislation as standalone, the Sanders and then a sponsored with a Republican, but he will get amendments to legislation. But the fact you have to explain this situation to so many people, it makes it complicated. That's why sometimes you'll have people running for Congress, and you'll have somebody who's been in there for 20 years, and the guy running against them will say, this guy's been in Congress, he's only gotten 2 pieces of legislation passed. Mm-hmm. Well, that may technically be true, but the person may have also garnered, gotten millions and millions of dollars of appropriations into legislation that somebody else was the lead sponsor of. But it's very hard to kind of explain this Byzantine, maze of how legislation works. People just want to see direct results. And in the case of Amy Klobuchar, she's one of the rare members of the United States Senate that actually has over 100 pieces of legislation that she is actually one of the lead, not the co-sponsors.
Well, I wanted to ask you about something else, too. And we also do an interview after the debate with a woman named Kristen Arnold. She's someone that actually looks at the moderators. How did they handle the questioning? Did they give equitable time? What were the questions that were asked? Things like that. So she likes to look at, who got the most airtime, speaking time. And tonight, it seems to me, just generally speaking, Bernie Sanders got a lot of screen time. And I wanted to throw out a theory I had on that and see what you think. Most recently, in the last couple of days, there was a Vanity Fair piece that Bernie Sanders was very upset about MSNBC not reporting fairly on him. And they made a big deal of it. And the fact that other networks start to pick up on it, they even had the catchy headline, which is Fox News treats me better than MSNBC. It goes into the debate, MSNBC doing this one. I thought, well, I wonder if they're trying to make good on a Bernie Sanders by giving him a little extra time. Did it seem like they gave a little bit more leeway to him tonight?
There's definitely a similitude in our thinking on that. I thought the exact same thing. They may have overcompensated a tad. Chuck Todd has been absolutely eviscerated by the Bernie bros, by kind of the intelligentsia that supports Bernie Sanders for stuff that he, for what he has said. They say that he compared Bernie Sanders supporters to Nazis. I mean, he was kind of taking out of context on that. But there's a lot of enmity toward MSNBC on the behalf of the Sanders people. And one thing about, I always say, the Sanders people, they're vocal. I mean, if you say something about Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar, their people will not be insistent on, you know, going after the person who goes after you. But in Bernie Sanders' case, I mean, these are people who will absolutely take a bullet for the guy. And as soon as they see any negative press or anybody that they think is being inequitable toward them, they're going to do everything out. They're going to do an absolute onslaught against that network or that person. And Chuck Dodd specifically, there was actually in a movement online, a very small movement, but a movement nonetheless, to actually have MSNBC fire Chuck Dodd because they say he's been unfair to Bernie Sanders. So I think that the fact that he's moderated this debate, the last thing he wanted was for, you know, there essentially be, you know, some sort of riots against him for it. But
yeah, so even one of the last questions was, if this goes to a brokered convention, would you support it, right? So that was right before they went to the closing statements, they asked this. And you see, yes, Chuck Dodd say, okay, we got to make it quick. So basically enough to get 10 words out, then you force it to the next person, force it to the next person. Bernie, we know what you're going to say, so we'll let you go last. So Bernie goes up, everyone else gets 10 words, he gets like 30 to 45 seconds. And so it's like they really, you're right, I think they over and above wanted to try to make it good with Bernie this time around. And this, you know, it seems like it worked.
It's like his supporters are very similar. If you look back to Ron Paul's in 2008, there were people that supported Ron Paul. You know, there was no God but Ron Paul. In Bernie Sanders' case, there is no God but Bernie Sanders. And the challenge for Bernie Sanders, for the Democratic Party, if he does not garner the nomination, is to keep the Bernie Sanders people in the fold and have them support the Democratic presidential nominee, which is going to, it probably would be easy if it was Elizabeth Warren, but it could be very hard if it's someone like Michael Bloomberg, who in many respects is the anathema of everything that Bernie Sanders stands for. So if he does garner the nomination, he's going to bring in a lot of folks from the suburbs. He's going to bring in a lot of, you know, middle-aged women, for example, moderate suburban swing voters, some disaffected Republicans. But a lot of the Bernie people, potentially, I think, could either go to the Green Party or stay home. And I think that's kind of the nightmare scenario for some of the Democratic intelligentsia right now.
Yeah, so this is a tough spot for the DNC right now. So they could move very progressive in their candidate or risk, again, the people that would have voted for Bernie sitting this out because they just resent that they did
or this. Or see the Green Party get, you know, 3 or 4% in Ohio and in Michigan.
Well, just before we go, one last question for you, Rich Rubino. If you were to come up with the two big winners and the two big losers, and there, I don't know if there is a big winner on this one, who would you come up with on the top and bottom?
The top, I would have to say Elizabeth Warren, because she came back. It's amazing how little coverage she's even gotten in the past few weeks. She's almost been a non-entity. She really came back, and she came back with a vengeance. I think I would also put Amy Klobuchar there as somebody who, I think she's increasing her momentum from Iowa, New Hampshire, but I don't see where she is able to win Nevada, win South Carolina. She's obviously going to go to the Super Tuesday states and hope that either Buttigieg or Joe Biden has a very poor showing between now and then. The two losers were obviously Michael Bloomberg. He just seemed out of his league. It seemed, you know, it was really kind of, it was fascinating how unprepared he seemed. The other one was probably Tom Steyer, because for all the money, the other billionaire, for all the money he put in, he didn't even make the debate stage. So,
no. And they changed the rules and whatnot just recently. Bloomberg, I'm surprised, got into this one. It seems like the candidates were locked in well ahead of time for the other debates. This one, man, he squeaked in a couple of days before.
Oh, no, absolutely. And then you have Tom Steyer, the other billionaire, and then you have Tulsi Gabbard, who's still campaigning, by the way. She's not running for re-election in Hawaii, so she's probably going to be this till the end. That's another nightmare scenario for the Democrats, by the way, is Tulsi Gabbard either runs as a Libertarian or the Green Party nominee. I don't think that's going to happen, but there are members of the Democratic Party who are just absolutely trepidatious that that's going to happen. But I think that I do think that Tom Steyer, probably the best thing he should have done, probably with all of his money, would have been to just flood the airwaves in the commercials, you know, advertising for his campaign, but he didn't do that.
Yeah. Rich Rubino, if people want to look you up online, where can they find you?
Yep, just find me, Rich Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O. Either find me on Facebook, Google me, or just go to www.polita-geek.com.
Which is great. Polita-geek.com, American Politics on the Rocks, your latest book. You can check out some of his other works at that Polita-geek.com. Rich Rubino, again, thank you for coming on to Overnight America.
Oh, thank you. It was quite a raucous affair.
I can't believe there's another debate. What, next week already?
Oh, they should just do them every day. They have a roadshow.
I know, it's like the
50th. Even after the election, they should continue these debates.
It's almost like WWF wrestling. It's like they go to a different city every week and they put on their live show, pack it up, and go somewhere else.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's funny to talk about WWE. You know, Jesse Ventura used that as a springboard to the governorship of Minnesota.
Oh yeah, some celebrities have found that way. All right. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. michaelsflooringoutlet.com.
If you watched the debate tonight and you got some comments or thoughts on it, why don't you give me a call? We just did a really good segment with Rich Rubino and pretty good breakdown of it. And they're still talking to the different candidates that were on stage. Right now, MSNBC talking to Pete Buttigieg. Even the parts I saw, it looked like he tried to put up a fight. But man, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like when you're watching an NFL game and they've learned your secret. And they know what call you're going to play ahead of time, and they just completely shut down your offense. His offense was shut down tonight, and nothing he was doing was working. That's what it seemed like. 436-7900. You can call or text that line. I get it right here in the studio. Also, 800-925-1120. Let's go to Elvis, who's calling in St. Louis here. Welcome to Overnight America.
Mr. Ryan.
How are you?
Hello, buddy. Long time listener. Don't call you very often, but the other night I was laying in bed, and about 12:30, I heard that Rubino fellow.
Oh yeah,
talking politics,
right.
Talking history.
Yeah, we do that on Mondays. We normally, yeah. But since the debates tonight, we like to welcome him in after those two.
Well, my friend, I want you to know that for 35 years, have studied politics, history, and the Illinois government. Mm-hmm. So I know a few things myself. As a matter of fact, my 1979, my first encounter with the United States president, is I was held in the arms by Jimmy Carter in Hannibal, Missouri.
Wow, what was that story? Yeah. Tell me.
Well, 1979, my father and mother and grandfather and a few other relatives all got together and decided to go see Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Carter was with him, and I believe the daughter, too. Jimmy Carter gets off the boat, walks up to all these people, and they're taking pictures and all this, and my mom pushes me into President Carter's arms.
Pushes you.
Seriously. And, you know, I tell the family that I do believe partially part of it, but they don't believe me.
Now, so anyway, luckily, you didn't knock them down or something. You know, you get a big shove. Oh, man.
Oh, good land. No, I was too small for anything to hurt the man, I promise you.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Jimmy Carter's not really known as a linebacker by any means, but he is a farmer.
No, I guess he's no Gerald Ford.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of neat.
But seriously, my friend, I was held by Jimmy Carter, and then after that, every 4 years, we would go to Springfield. I live in Rudehouse, and we go to Springfield, and we'd always see the Democratic candidate, whether it was Walter Mondale John Glenn, I think we saw one time in Springfield, and yeah, just all these different candidates. And my dad, before he died, said to people that he would meet, he had shook hands with the last five presidents, which was true. Starting with Gerald Ford all the way to Bill Clinton, he had shook hands with all of them, and pictures and everything were taken. But I listen to your radio show all the time, and I really enjoy you. And I got one more thing to say to you before I get off here. But I just want you to know, today my brother, I got him to sit down at the table at the computer, and I played Rebecca Black for him.
You did not?
Yes, sir. He told me, he said, good land, what kind of song is that? I told him what you do. You yell and scream and make a big hoot. And I told him, I said, every Thursday night Ryan works, he does it. And I said, if I'm not in bed, I go in the bedroom.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is something else. Ah, just for you, I'm going to play it tonight on a Wednesday night.
I'll have to go in the bedroom and listen.
All right, I'll give you a minute. Go do that, Elvis. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, buddy, you take care of your family and have a good night.
You too, bye. Yep. What an awesome story about Jimmy Carter. I'm giving Elvis some time to get into that bedroom so he can enjoy Rebecca Black on a Wednesday. I really didn't know what he was going to say there. Oh, I was telling people about you, and then I introduced them to Rebecca Black. Wow. What year was that made? This has got to be at least a 10-year-old song now. Yeah, Rebecca Black Friday. Let's see. That came out in 2011. Oh, 9 years ago. Wow. You know, they did a version of that on The Tonight Show Jimmy Fallon did one, and it was hilarious. And they take it down. You know, they remove it from YouTube and such. They don't want you seeing it. It's, I don't know if it's a copyright issue, but they had Taylor Hicks come out and sing part of it, and it was just hilarious. And I don't know, again, if it was just not having the rights to it, but every Thursday night we like to play Friday, and I don't know if I'm the last radio show in America that still does this, but why not? Yeah. And this is just for Elvis, so he can enjoy it tonight in his bedroom. Yes, we are. Doesn't it feel good when it's Thursday? Now you're getting me all psyched out. Now it feels like it's Friday, but it's really not. And by the way, this is an edited version. I put this together just for us to play on a Thursday night. There's lyrics to this song. It goes on. There's a music video. So if all you know this song is what we play here, it's completely different than... completely different than what would normally be played if anyone still does. How many views do you think that song has on YouTube? Let's find out. Rebecca Black Friday has 140.5 million views. 140.5 million. Wow. Did you watch the debate tonight? Give us a call. 436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. This is what I think is going to happen. I think Bernie Sanders is going to keep a strong lead. I think that Joe Biden is going to go to third place, and I think Amy Klobuchar is going to jump up. She may even get to second or third place, and Biden may even push down even further. You never know. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Let me check out a couple of text messages that came in. One person texted in, I'm undecided, but some of the things said tonight should have moved the debate from Paris, Las Vegas to circus down the strip. Oy, ay, oh, ah. A couple of those moments. If you're a Democrat, I'm sure you enjoyed watching this. You know, it brought me back to the old 2016 election. I enjoyed watching the Republican debates to see how they interact with each other, seeing who was going to come out the front runner. It was fascinating to see the way Donald Trump rose from a joke to the president of the United States. No one thought he was going to win that one. Here's another text message, and you can text into it, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120 to call the show. Wherever you are in the United States, you have that ability to use that mobile phone of yours. Or maybe you're calling from that phone that is on the wall. It's still corded and you still have a rotary attached to it. That's fine, too. Text message said, what was your opinion of Mike Bloomberg? So this is the part I saw, and I only got to see bits and pieces of it during the breaks. But this is what I thought of Mike Bloomberg. He felt like Mr. Roboto, like he's the billion-dollar man. He gets up there, and yeah, I don't need to prepare. I just come up and say what I planned on saying. He's Mr. Roboto. Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg. You could probably remake that if you really wanted to. Let's see what Sue's up to in St. Louis. Welcome to Overnight America. Hi, Sue.
Hi. First time I've ever watched a Democratic debate, and I was exhausted. I had to leave a couple of times just trying to keep up with it all and to listen to all that. Well, anyway, I thought it was very interesting because toward the end, Bloomberg, you could see he was not impressed at all and even thinking something like this is a juvenile attempt to do away with Trump. And he said, and I can't paraphrase what he said, but he said something like, if you've done anything during this debate, you've made Donald Trump a winner.
Oh, yeah. There was one clip. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Yeah. I think he's right.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
People watching this, Republicans watching this, they're thinking to themselves, none of these knuckleheads are going to be able to take on the Donald.
Well, not with some of their ideas. Too far out.
Yeah.
Way too far out.
So overall, was there anyone that impressed you?
Well, Pete and Amy, I thought were more reasonable.
You think so? Okay. I thought those two were going at it, too, weren't they?
Oh, they were going at it. Everybody went at everybody. At first, Vice President Biden didn't get much of an opportunity to say anything.
Yeah.
And Bloomberg really didn't take the opportunity to say very much unless he was directly attacked.
Mm-hmm.
He was directly attacked.
Yeah, I found the clip for you. Let me play this real quick. Yeah. I think this is what you're talking about with Mike Bloomberg. CBS posted it.
I can't think of a ways that would make it easier for Donald Trump to get reelected than listening to this conversation. It's ridiculous.
All right, so that's it.
Beautiful.
I bet you. Could you imagine, you know, with all of the different ads that are running right now, and Bloomberg's got a million of them, I can see Donald Trump pulling that one. All them, the fussing and the feuding on the stage. It was entertaining for those to watch as an outsider that really doesn't have a horse in that race because they don't care who is pulled out there. They just know that Donald Trump is going to beat whoever that person is.
Yep. Hope so.
All right. Thanks, Sue. Have a good night.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Domo arigato, Mr. Bloomberg. Should we just play Sticks for the rest of the night? Oh, that works too with the lyrics. Didn't he say he wanted his NDAs kept a secret, all of his little payoffs to the women or whatever?
With parts made in Japan.
Secret.
I've got a secret. I am the modern man.
I am the billion man. Yeah, that would be a great remake for Michael Bloomberg. I can see people having some fun with that, Mr. Roboto. Oh, yeah. 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. There's a bill here in Missouri that was debated, and I can see a lot of merit in this, and I'm glad it's actually being brought up. So out of Jefferson City, it says, if you're a friend of a survivor, it makes you feel helpless. A friend of a sexual survivor. Because as you find out, there's, what, several thousand rape kits that have not been tested in the state of Missouri, and it's not something that's unique to Missouri. It's something that's unique to this country, that we're just not taking it serious enough, or we don't have the money or the resources that we put into it in order to get these things tested in a timely fashion. Imagine being sexually assaulted and having proof that you were sexually assaulted, and you present that proof to the police, and that proof is ignored. And so long, who knows if there's different statutes that will be expired by the time they actually get around to testing this thing. Because honestly, if you're going to wait, I don't know, 7-10 years or whatever it is to test one of these kits, by then, how is it even possible for the person that's accused of this to defend themselves after that much time has passed? You got to test these things in a timely fashion. So if there is an accusation of sexual assault, rape, things like that nature, that they can be charged or held accountable for these things. So the Senate Seniors, Families, and Children's Committee heard testimony on a proposed bill. They call it a Bill of Rights for Sexual Assault Survivors. Senator David Satter out of Cassville, and I've emailed his office, I was hoping to get him on the show, sponsored the bill, which would establish protections for survivors of sexual assault. During these forensic examinations, they say survivors should have confidence in the system that they'll be taken care of. I would go even further and say we're at a point where we're not even taking it serious. How can you put this on a shelf and ignore evidence of sexual assault and rape and to tell these victims, okay, we'll see you later, and that's it, and nothing ever happens? And then what happens to the person that went out to the police and went through it, and I'm sure it was not comfortable, and I'm sure in some ways it was embarrassing because, you know, the way that they have to get the evidence for this, it's not something they would prefer to do, and they still go out and do it. And then what happens? The person that did that to them, probably still a part of their life, probably still someone they see on the street, probably still someone that's doing something to society, and who knows if they're doing even more to other women. So Missouri is currently analyzing a large number of untested kits. Attorney General's office said about 7,000 in the first exposed the backlog. Wow. So get this done, all right? Get this done. It says failing to uphold these rights or intentionally neglecting them would open law enforcement and others to civil liability. Other agencies' lack of resources or funding to follow the law wouldn't be liable if they act in good faith, meaning if unless you get some money to this thing, it's going to continue down this path. We need to start addressing this a lot quicker. So good for them to do that. Post-Dispatch posted an article. Hopefully I can get Representative Sattler on to discuss it a little bit more in detail. One more hour of Overnight America. We're live until midnight, and Kristen Arnold is a rules analyst. How did the moderators do in tonight's? And who got the most airtime? Who got the most speaking time? Who was the winner tonight? We'll find out. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.